Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning, I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now, healthcare, major issue. Republicans are desperate trying to rush this thing through. Well, guess what? They say they might have the votes, but it's too early to tell. And former President Barack Obama weighs in for the first time with his thoughts publicly. So we'll show you the speech that he gave yesterday in New York. Horrific images of destruction and misery are coming out of Puerto Rico, also of the U.S. Virgin Islands. We'll talk with Jacqueline Charles, the Caribbean Haitian correspondent for the Miami Herald, who can give us an update on those countries in Hurricane Maria. A new Nielsen report, African-American Women, Our Power, Her Magic, delves into the strides Black women have made in everything from business to education to raising our families to their influence on culture. We'll talk with Cheryl Grace Pearson McNeil, Senior Vice President with Nielsen, about the report and how sisters are doing. He's a world-renowned entrepreneur whose mission is empowering underserved communities. Now Operation Hope founder John O'Brien has a new book out called The Memo. We'll talk to him about his five rules for your economic liberation. It is the largest gathering of African-American leaders and policymakers in the country. Of course, the 47th annual Congressional Black Caucus Foundation annual legislative conference has begun. We'll show you some of the things that have already started, including a panel we did yesterday, policy to protest, where do we stand in this post-Obama world. Also, yesterday they honored Spike Lee and Yolanda Adams. We'll have some of that. Plus, the Memorial Foundation, which built the MLK Memorial, they continue their work. We'll show you some of that as well. It's time to bring the funk. News One Now, TV One. Let's go. The battle against the Republicans' bill in the Senate trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act continues. Former President Barack Obama is not being silent. Yesterday, he weighed in saying people are alive today because of his signature bill and said watching Republicans try to destroy the Affordable Care Act over and over and over has been frustrating.
The legislation that we passed was full of things that still need to be fixed. It wasn't perfect. But it was better. And so when I see people trying to undo that hard-won progress for the 50th or 60th time with bills that would raise costs or reduce coverage or roll back protections for older Americans or people with pre-existing conditions, the cancer survivor, the expecting mom, or the child with autism or asthma, for whom coverage once again would be almost unattainable, it is aggravating. And all of this being done without any demonstrable economic or actuarial or plain common sense rationale, it frustrates. And it's certainly frustrating to have to mobilize every couple of months to keep our leaders from inflicting real human suffering on our constituents.
And of course, when it came to this issue, Donald Trump, lies, 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 and lies again.
I think there's tremendous support for it. I think it's actually much better than the previous shot, which was very sadly let down.
There's not tremendous support for this particular bill because nearly every health care organization is against it. Insurance companies, of course, the American Cancer Society, American Lung Association, March of Dimes, and we can go on and on and on, but Republicans are determined to undo the Affordable Care Act, and they have just 10 days to ram something through the Senate. They only need a 51-vote majority due to their rules when it comes to reconciliation. And then Donald Trump last night tweeted another lie. Quote, I would not sign Graham Cassidy if it did not include coverage of pre-existing conditions. It does. A great bill, repeal and replace. But again, coverage for pre-existing conditions will be left up to the states who have the power to charge higher premiums for those with them. We caught up with Lee Saunders, the president of AFSCME, at the MLK Memorial Luncheon yesterday, and his views of the Republican bill echo the majority of Americans.
It's going to result in millions of people not having health care coverage. They're going to diminish and decrease the amount of money going to state governments. That's why governors are so concerned about it. It's going to have an impact on the African-American community. We've got to continue to be vigilant as far as fighting their attempts to gut ACA. We're going to be organizing communities across the country just as we did before. We cannot give up. They're going to continue to do this, and we've got to be very vigilant as far as fighting back and making our voices heard like never before. And there are going to be a few senators that are going to be very key, as it was last time, as far as saying no. This is bad for Americans. This is bad for folks who rely upon the healthcare system across the country. So we're going to have to organize and mobilize and educate our communities just as we did before, and pushing back and making them understand that attacking ACA is not the way to go. It's talking to the legislators, especially talking to the senators, knocking on their doors, visiting them at in their states that they where they reside, coming to Capitol Hill, rallying, making our voices heard, and having a coordinated action and saying that this is unacceptable and everyone deserves quality health care in this country, and we're going to fight for it.
Yesterday, I showed you a clip of TV host Jimmy Kimmel railing against the co-sponsor of the GOP health care bill, Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, who he says lied about the plan when he appeared on his show. Here's more of what Kimmel had to say.
This is a bad bill, but don't take my word for it. Here are just some of the organizations that oppose this Graham Cassidy bill. The American Cancer Society, the American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, American Lung Association, the Arthritis Foundation, Cystic Fibrosis, the ALS Association, the March of Dimes, Multiple Sclerosis Society, Children's Hospital of LA. Basically, any group you've ever given money to thinks this is a bad idea. Do you trust them or do you trust him? Okay?
Surprisingly, both Cassidy and Senator Lindsey Graham, the other co-sponsor of the bill, we're not happy with Jimmy Kimmel.
That was a personal attack, and I can't help that. But all I can say is that if you're in Texas or if you're in Maine and Virginia, Missouri, there'll be resources in your state that you've not had to provide you coverage, and we have protections for pre-existing conditions.
Here's what I wished he would have done. I wished he would have called Senator Cassidy to ask him, is what I'm reading true? Because he heard some liberal talking points that are absolute garbage. He bought it hook, line, and sinker. He didn't give him the courtesy of hearing his side of the story. He went on national TV and called this man who has worked for the underprivileged in healthcare all of his life a liar, and I think that's inappropriate.
Last I check, if you lie, you're a liar. Let's go to our panel, A. Scott Bolden, legal analyst and chairman of the National Bar Association PAC, Tamika Mallory, national co-chair of the Women's March, Ralph Chittums, Republican strategist and principal of Black Elephant Consultings, Wendy Osefo, political analyst and professor of education at Johns Hopkins University. Folks, I'm just trying to understand. All the healthcare advocate organizations, AARP, all of those particular groups, the hospital association, even the insurance companies are saying it's a lie. Literally, Blue Cross came out yesterday and said what they're saying is not true. I'm sorry. You can't. All of those folks surely can't be lying, and these two are the only ones who are correct, Ralph.
Well, first things first, no one exactly knows exactly what's in this bill to start with. That's the first thing.
That's the problem.
Okay, that's the first.
We know enough, though.
Right. So everyone is saying it's going to do this, it's going to do that. No one actually knows exactly what it's going to do. That's the first thing. But this bill does not do away with the pre-existing conditions, from what I've been able to read and what I've been able to learn. It gives states the opportunity to opt out and put other provisions in place, but individuals with pre-existing conditions will still be able to obtain insurance.
But the argument that people... Go ahead, Wendy.
But there's a caveat to that. The caveat is that they also allow the states or the insurer to be able to say, yes, you have a pre-existing condition, but we can charge you higher for your premiums.
Exactly.
Furthermore, let's look at the numbers here. $214 billion will be cut, and states will lose money. Of those states, there are 34 that will lose money. And we have Michigan, Colorado, Pennsylvania, all states that Trump won. So go ahead and play games if you want to, because when it comes to midterms, you cut people's insurance, they're not going to vote for you.
Exactly.
Well, what I would say, honestly, is I'm going to paraphrase Chris Rock.
Oh,
he
boy.
Says, you buy insurance in case something happens.
Uh-huh.
That's what insurance is. You buy insurance at the front end in case something happens. If something has already happened, then you are no longer buying insurance.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because you are buying basically then the ability to have someone else pay for what has already happened. Because insurance you buy before something happens. You don't, it's like you don't have a car accident and then buy car insurance after the accident. You buy the insurance before the accident so that in case you get into an accident, you have coverage. If something has already happened to you, you are no longer buying insurance.
So you're endorsing this bill. You're endorsing this bill, right?
I'm saying that I don't have a problem with persons with pre-existing conditions having to pay a little bit more because they are not, in fact, purchasing insurance.
So you're saying the person who has cancer that right. has, you said that person should be paying $154,000 a year.
Right.
I'm not an actuary.
No, I'm sorry.
So I'm not getting into
numbers.
I'm just saying that a person with a pre-existing condition, I don't have a problem with a person with a pre-existing condition paying
should they pay $154,000 under this bill?
Of course not. Neither should the elderly, neither should the people with pre-existing conditions. It simply doesn't make sense. And what's happening to the $254 billion my colleague talked about? That's going into the pockets of the insurers, if you will. The Republicans seem hell-bent for some reason, right before midterms, as best as they can, to cut insurance coverage for people, to line the insurance companies with these savings, and then the ultimate, whenever we as people or communities of color hear about, well, the state's going to run it, and they're going to be state block grants, that's not going to be good for people of color or poor people.
Tamika, what's interesting here again, the last Republican bill, 14% of Americans supported it. I mean, they hated it. Mm-hmm. The folks who do this for a living say this is worse than that particular bill.
Right.
This has nothing to do with health care. Mm-hmm. They don't want any hearings.
Exactly.
They want to rush it through.
No CBO.
No Congressional Budget Office examination. This is to fulfill a campaign promise.
Absolutely.
It has nothing to do with health care.
It is a personal vendetta against President Obama, bottom line. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, what is very dangerous about it is all of these different nuances. The reality is that if you allow states to control what happens to people of color, because we are the people who are going to be impacted.
That's right.
The people with the pre-existing conditions are mainly folks in our communities who have been neglected in terms of health care for all of our lives. So the fact that we will now have to pay these out-of-pocket expenses that we can't afford anyway. We already can't afford the pre-insurance that you talked about, and now you're telling me that I got to pay more because you helped make me sick. I mean, let's be serious here.
But Barola, here's the thing. Let's debunk one thing, and that is these promises that the Republicans keep talking about keeping. Who are they keeping these promises to other than themselves? Mm. Because if 18% of the people don't want the alternative that they're promoting, I think this is the sixth or seventh version. Then who are they keeping promises to? Corporate America or just themselves?
No, because their supporters are dumb. Their supporters are dumb. These are the very same people who oppose Obamacare but love the Affordable Care Act. They're dumb.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
One thing that has bothered me and has irked me about all of these Republican plans is they have not included what would be the one thing which would drive down the cost, and that's the ability to purchase insurance across state lines.
But here's
that's the one thing that has irked me more than anything else about all of these Republican plans.
There's no empirical data that would support that, though. That's just
rhetoric. Yeah,
competition drives prices. But let me tell you about competition, who gets hurt in competition. Mm. Poor people, communities
that's
of
right,
color,
right.
and
that's
others.
Right. Black
and brown the trust factor is at an all-time
exactly
low
right.
in this country.
If I
don't
could,
tell me about
if
competition.
Years
we can't
ago,
compete.
The only competition that is here is them against Obama. Right. That's the competition.
Empire Blue Cross Blue Shield. Because at that point, that was the best Blue Cross plan in the nation. It was lower than the Blue Cross Blue Shield here in the nation's
But every
capital.
State is different.
But,
that's why the costs
but
are different.
But
you
if
do
you
it
allow
across state lines
to shop nationwide for their plans, it creates competition.
No guarantee
and that's
going to work.
Lower prices.
Here is the most basic, fundamental thing. Republicans in the Senate do not want you to know what is in this bill.
Exactly.
They do not want a thorough examination. Mm-hmm. We spent 15 months going over the Affordable Care Act. They want to pass this literally in days. They want to limit debate to 90 seconds to 2 minutes. If somebody wants to deny debate, if they don't want a CBO score, that means they have something to hide.
Exactly.
Period. Let's go to that's what's happening with Hurricane Maria. Electricity is out across the island of Puerto Rico. The energy grid took such a severe beating from Hurricane Maria that restoring power to everyone may take months, according to Puerto Rico's governor. Roofs have been blown off and streets are flooded in the wake of the storm's fury. Mandatory curfews have been instituted. The storm battered St. Croix, the largest of the U.S. Virgin Islands that was spared by Hurricane Irma, and in St. Thomas, there's widespread flooding as residents were just beginning to clean up after Irma's direct hit. The remote island of Dominica is in ruins. Maria has weakened to a Category 2 hurricane. The National Hurricane Center says it's about 90 miles northeast of Punta Cana, a popular tourist destination in the Dominican Republic. Let's go to Jacqueline Charles via Skype from New York. Of course, she's the Caribbean correspondent and the Haitian correspondent for the Miami Herald. Jacqueline, again, storm after storm, these folks are taking a severe beating.
Yes, they are taking a severe beating. I have to tell you, it started with Irma. Myself, I was in Haiti during Irma, and now we're seeing what's happening with Maria. Dominica, it made landfall as a Category 5. They're still trying to assess the damages there. You had the prime minister, his roof tore off. He had to be rescued in the middle of this storm. We're looking at Puerto Rico, where people are going to have to spend months without power. Right now in Haiti and in the Dominican Republic, I'm having reports of severe flooding, heavy rains and winds, and we just don't know when this is going to let up.
And obviously, U.S. Virgin Islands, they're going through a very, very difficult time.
They are. They're going through a very difficult time. Governor Mapp, ahead of this storm, you know, was telling the population, especially those in St. Croix that live near the South Shore, that you can see wave crashes of 25 to 30 feet. They warn people to please evacuate. They were still trying to just clean up from St. Thomas. And now you have Maria, and we're still trying to get some additional information because basically all the communication went down in St. Croix, and even his satellite phone, we weren't able to get a hold of him. So hopefully today we get a little bit more information about what Maria has done to the U.S. Virgin Islands.
All right, this, of course, is a live shot of Hurricane Maria as it stands right now. Again, having a tremendous impact on folks there in the Caribbean region. Jacqueline Charles, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
All right, folks, we'll be back on News One Now. We come back, we'll tell you about the earthquake in Mexico. All the folks who said there's no climate change, really? Really? So we'll have that, plus a new Nielsen report finds that the influence of black women on general markets continues to grow. We'll break it down as well. 17 after the hour, News One Now on TV One.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
The death toll in central Mexico has climbed to 230 people as search and rescue missions continue after a 7.1 magnitude earthquake rattled the region on Tuesday. A lot of attention has been focused on that elementary school that collapsed. More than two dozen deaths are confirmed there, but still some children and adults unaccounted for. Crews are digging through the rubble in hopes of finding survivors.
Apparently, they've seen one life, but we've taken the rest of them out. And for that, we're going to need a lot of help.
As the search continues, buildings continue to collapse. The Mexico City government says 52 people have been rescued so far. The last time an earthquake of this magnitude hit Mexico was in September of 1985. Mm-hmm. Former tennis star James Blake is hoping his testimony helps a New York City police officer lose his job. In 2015, Officer James Frascatore mistook Blake for a suspect. He grabbed him and threw him to the ground. Mm-hmm. This week, Blake testified at the officer's trial with the department. Now, the officer claims he acted professionally. Mm-hmm. And calmly. Do y'all see the damn video? That's professional and calmly. Talk about lying. But Blake says the officer needs to be fired and is calling for police reform.
This officer shouldn't have a job. He doesn't have the temperament for it. He doesn't have the capabilities to serve our community. The bad apples need to be held accountable because it makes me nervous around the ones that are doing the job the right way. The ones that are doing the job the right way are hurt by the ones that are doing it the wrong way.
He was calm.
All right, in Mississippi, a teacher's attempt to blame her racist Facebook post on a hacker did not work, and now she's out of a job. Cammy Rose, who was a second grade teacher at Batesville Intermediate, wrote on Facebook, quote, "If blacks in this country are so offended, no one is forcing them to stay here. Why don't they pack up and move back to Africa where they will have to work for a living? I am sure our government will pay for it. We pay for everything else." Says the woman in a state that gets 50% of its budget from the federal government. On Monday, she tried to clean up by saying her post, saying she was hacked. Batesville school officials didn't buy it. She got fired. Parents of students in Rosa's class are not surprised by her Facebook post.
No.
He told me that she was mean. She didn't show him no love.
You gotta give him. I was hacked. Ain't nobody trying to hack your Facebook page.
Right.
Rose can appeal the school's decision. Maybe that'll get hacked too. All right, players on a Little League football team in Illinois are taking a stand against police brutality. 8-year-old players with the Cahokia Quarterback Club football team took a knee during the national anthem during Sunday's game in Belleville, Illinois. Their coach, Orlando Gooden, says the players came to him about protesting after they watched the demonstrations in St. Louis, Missouri.
The kids asked me, did I see them protesting and rioting in St. Louis? And I said, yes, I said, do you know why they're doing it? I felt like it was a good teaching moment for me to circle the team up and have a brief meeting. One of the kids asked, can we do that? And I said, as long as we know why we're doing it, I don't have a problem with kneeling. What I teach my kids is love, integrity, honesty, fairness, the respect, the ability of boundaries.
All the parents on the team supported the coach's decision to take a knee, but there was some backlash on Gooden's Facebook page. Gooden says the kneeling was a one-time protest for the season. The only black-owned bank in Chicago is set to receive a $20 million deposit from the city. The Illinois Service Federal Savings and Loan Association will receive the deposit. City Treasurer Kurt Summers says the deposit into the bank, founded in 1934, is meant to help drive economic development in the city's neighborhoods. This should have been consistent. There should have been more deposits by the city. Go to our panel here. This is one of the things that Mander Jackson often talked about, and other folks as well. When President Bill Clinton was in office, he was pushed by Congresswoman Maxine Waters and others to do the exact same thing. What often happens is black banks are totally ignored by governmental entities, and those are taxpayer dollars, the people's dollars. You would think they would be able to say, let's help numerous institutions, including black banks.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important for us to focus on them. We're talking about sort of the economic advantages for our communities. We know that black banks are the strength of our communities, right? This is where we're gonna be hired. We're gonna be more likely to get loans and the things that we need in order to be economically sound. So I certainly think that this is important, and it's something that we need to start talking about more as leaders and influencers, because we really often sort of overlook the issue of how our black banks and black institutions are upheld.
Oh, super important, though, Roland. I mean, the fact of the matter is, not just for every entrepreneurship or entrepreneur, access to capital is the number one challenge. Mm-hmm. Black banks are more likely to loan, invest, match federal funds, get access to treasury funds. I mean, it's huge, and if they're intentional about it at the ground level, we know small businesses hire more people collectively than one or many major corporations. So that investment ought to be an investment in every major city and every major black bank or small black bank, because it works and brings us economic freedom. So more of that ought to be done.
Absolutely. And we always talk about helping black and brown communities, and this is one way that we can help black and brown communities, is for us to uplift us in an economic way. Mm-hmm. And what I see as an educator oftentimes is that students want to go to school, but their parents do not have the loans or the funding for them to go to school. Right. So we have this resource within our communities that we can pull from, and I just wish more attention was brought to black banks, because it's there.
And it strengthens the black banks. They make money at it.
Yes, absolutely.
But also, while this subject is important, another...
You're a Republican. You got to agree with this.
Go ahead.
The bigger issue is we in the black community don't support black banks the way we should. Now, I'm not saying the government is supposed to. No, it is true.
Anecdotally, that may be true. Yeah. Well, no, but consistently, it's just not true. Look at Industrial Bank of Washington. You look at Black Savings Bank in Chicago and New York.
My black company is at a black bank.
Absolutely.
So I'm saying what I'm doing.
Right.
But as a general rule, if you talk to most black people, Their money is not in a black bank.
Well, if
their money
if
is in Bank of America,
black people,
they're in this
black
place,
economic
that.
Development.
So
their money is in a bank.
We need to
they
get our
from
own
black
community
banks.
To support the institutions inside of our own community.
And y'all gonna respect my clock. All right, I gotta go to a break right now.
Thing.
When we come back, you can say that during a break. That you know, black single mothers are raising 57% of the nation's black children, or that black women are the majority owners in more than 1.5 million businesses. That's just two of the takeaways from a new report by Nielsen. We'll talk with Cheryl Pearson McNeil next. Plus, entrepreneur and Operation Hope founder John Hope Bryant is here to talk about the message in his new book, The Memo, Five Rules for Your Economic Liberation. All that's next. News One Now on TV One.
Don't leave.
My audience knows very well what we talk about.
I know the consequences.
A second hour of News One Now starts next.
Are you serious?
Don't you just love it when there's video?
News One Now continues on TV One.
Who hasn't heard of Black Girl Magic, the hashtag that defines the powerful influence that black women have across platforms ranging from women's rights to popular culture, the nation's economy? Well, Nielsen has just released a report called African American Women, Our Science, Her Magic. It breaks down some of the achievements black women are making, including the fact that they control most of the African American community's $1.2 trillion in spending power. Black women are trendsetters for women of every race, buying brands that reflect their style, and most say they are more likely to buy brands that support a charity or cause they care about. Now, you know, sisters are spending lots on health and beauty products, and Nielsen suggests that companies looking to gain that market share should be diversifying their product lines. The report also highlights the power of African-American women's ambition. Black women are majority owners of more than 1.5 million businesses with over $42 billion in sales. Let's go right to Cheryl Pearson McNeil to break down this particular report here as well. Cheryl Grace Pearson McNeil, I forgot she got four names.
Just Cheryl Grace.
Lord, she got so many names, y'all. It's unbelievable.
Cheryl Grace.
Just so many names. That. Senior Vice President with Nielsen. Her title used to be longer. Now her name got longer. Her title got shorter. All right. So Cheryl, let's talk about this report. Now, you've done different reports in the past looking at viewing habits, things along those lines. Why this year focus specifically on black women?
So, you know, being a woman is great.
Absolutely.
Being a
Preach.
Black girl,
yes.
Or a black woman, as we all know now, is magic.
That's absolutely. Right.
But being a black female consumer is pure power.
Mm.
And that's one of the reasons we wanted to talk about what that power actually means, because black women, as the trendsetters that we are literally at the intersection of commerce, mm-hmm. culture, and consciousness.
Mm.
And we are impacting so many ways that other women think and dress and what they buy.
That's right.
We thought it was time to highlight that.
Mm. Absolutely.
Speaking of that, pull the graphic up, please. Again, I gave some of the stats when it came to businesses. Black women, first of all, start businesses at a faster rate than anybody else
they
in
do.
This country. And also 23% of black women have black bachelor's degrees or higher, up from 18%. They're also going to college more so than anybody else as well, Cheryl.
Yes. So all of that says that what we're doing now, it's not that we haven't been doing it all along. Mm-hmm. It's just that for some reason the world is taking notice.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that has to do with some of the other trends that we point out in this report, and that's how we're spending our time as consumers and our consumption habits. We watch, bar none, more TV. Mm-hmm. We listen to more radio. We are using our personal computers for internet mm-hmm. and video consumption. We're using our smartphones for those same things. And we're not afraid to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we actually share what we love, why we love it, who we love, why we love, when we do that, other people pay attention. And that works for marketers as well. So they're starting to pay attention and they're making decisions based on that we have. And so that's why you're seeing when you have successes like Issa Rae
mm.
on a platform online with her Awkward Girls series.
Right.
HBO took notice of all of us who were tuning in to watch that, and they turned it into a series.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're starting to see this phenomenon actually manifest itself in other ways.
Yeah. And I think about even our voting power, right? Like how we used it in this presidential election. And it just makes me think about the idea that people really do need to focus on what black women can do when we come together and decide that we're going to support anything thing, any person. That's right. And we're not always respected. And that's something that we have to change. And I think we change it by deciding where we're not going to spend our money also. So
absolutely,
it's not just about pouring in. It's also about holding that dollar back, especially if it's a corporation that you don't feel, or any particular entity that you don't feel represents your interests.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you aren't using all of this power for good,
right,
shame on us.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that we're starting to see that we are using it for good. And I think millennials are actually picking up on it as well. Mm. And that's getting some traction.
Absolutely. And I think that the beauty of all of this is us being able to change the narrative and create our own narrative. Mm. And what I'm loving is this sense of us being unapologetically Black and owning it, right? And embracing each other, whether it's the hashtag Black Girl Magic that we all use, just really loving and embracing ourselves for all we have to offer. And as you rightfully said, the world has caught wind to it. And they're, you know, just saying these women love themselves and they're capitalizing off of it almost.
And you brought up Issa Rae, and I loved her statement
yes.
the other night at the Emmys when they asked her, who are you supporting? And
anyone
she said,
Black.
Everybody Black.
Right. I love
everybody
that.
Black.
That's what we do.
That's what we
Black.
Do. Absolutely.
But I think what this highlights, though, is the power of the dollar.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely.
This is economics.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, I'm married to a Black woman.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Love her to
yes.
death.
We like to hear that, by the way.
And so we went out this
Girl, calm yourself.
And so she wanted to get some of the Rihanna makeup.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It is sold out
yeah,
across
that's right.
the country.
That's right.
You can't buy it anywhere.
That's right.
So I think the larger lesson that we, no, any of the shades, they're
all
gone. All
the shades.
They're all the
shades.
So I think one of the larger lessons that we need to take from this, not just for Black women, but for the Black community, is our dollars yeah. matter.
Mm-hmm.
And we can
that's
drive right. a lot of conversations simply by how we spend our dollars.
I mean, that's comment. The importance of doing the report. It's why Nielsen's been doing these reports for the last 7 years, because I saw all of this information coming across my desk, and I knew that businesses needed to be more aware of it as well. Mm-hmm. And Nielsen's been doing it for 7 years now. So.
All right. Market folks, go see the full report.
Go down to Nielsen.com and download the full report, Nielsen.com, and it's there for your asking.
All right, Cheryl, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk money next with best-selling author John Hope Bryan about his new book that speaks to how Black Americans can become more financially independent and erasing the credit score gap. It's all in his 5 rules for your economic liberation. That's next. News 1 Now on TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
John Hope Bryan is a highly successful entrepreneur, a philanthropic investor, financial literacy expert, and the founder and CEO of Operation Hope, an organization that works to make the free enterprise system work for poor and working class communities. And he's also a best-selling author. His new book is called The Memo, 5 Rules for Your Economic Liberation. And welcome back to the show.
Hey, man. Nice to be here.
Good seeing you. We've talked about this beforehand, this notion of the memo. What is the basis for you when you say we have not gotten the memo?
We're brilliant. We've been doing so much with so little for so long, we can almost do anything with nothing. Anytime the rules are published, the playing field is level. Sports, entertainment, the arts, we kill it. But after the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln, 1865, created a bank called the Freedmen's Bank to teach freed slaves about money. He was killed the next month. Nobody knows about the bank. Frederick Douglass tried to run it, put $10,000 of his own money into the bank. People think he was an abolitionist only. He was a businessman, owned mm-hmm. property in Baltimore, worth $5 million, this man. And when it failed, he said the failure of this bank did more to set freed slaves back in America than 10 more years of slavery. My point is, and he goes back, now you go to 1968 with President, with Dr. King and Ambassador Andrew Young in Memphis, Poor People's Campaign. King gets killed on the balcony as he pivots toward poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is this, it's not like we're dumb or we're stupid. It's what we don't know that we don't know that's killing us, but we think we know. We never got the memo. There's a memo on money. There's a memo on capitalism and free enterprise and ownership and wealth creation. Power, wealth, and aspiration are things no one teaches you. I wanted to deliver the memo, so we renamed the Freedmen's Bank. Secretary Jack Lew did, but at my request last year. It's across from the Treasury Department now. Your folks can Google search that right now and see we did that. But then we put Hope Inside locations on the ground.
They already know. We were there.
So we're raising credit scores 120 points because nothing changes your life more than God or love and moving your credit score 120 points today.
Now, here's what's interesting when you talk about this idea of not getting the memo. So somebody will say, well, yeah, but that was Madam C.J. Walker and that was A.G. Gaston. There were different. Yes, there were different individuals. What you're talking about is a collective, and not just a collective, yeah, but also a generational mindset that goes from one generation to the next.
It's also a problem that we got to go back 150 years to think about, whether it's Frederick Douglass or whether it's Gaston or Madam C.J. Walker, or we keep talking about this riot in a little place in Ohio. It's not like this has happened last week. Where's our Bill Gates? Where's our Steve Jobs? That's in the last 10 years, right? So the fact that we have these stories that are really antidotes and not symptomatic in our whole community is the problem. Here, let me drop the mic. The average credit score in America is 700. 15% of white people have a credit score below 620. That's basically Trump's voters. Mm-hmm. Those are rural, white, poor, distressed. They're dying faster than anybody else. 44% of black folks are brilliant people below 620. End of subject. You can't access the credit markets. You can't get a home loan. You can't be a small business owner. And then when you try, when the markets push the envelope, like in 2009, mm-hmm, and give you a loan you shouldn't have, we default because we don't have the tools, the memo, to do for ourselves. So what gives me great sort of hope is that not like we got the memo and we screwed it up. We never got the memo. And we want to deliver it at scale. We will deliver it at scale.
And for the person, you know, at home who goes, okay, so I mean, I hear you, John, talking about 120 credit points, but that's real in terms of, because when you talk about the amount of money that we spend on interest when it comes to cars, when it comes to houses, when it comes to the other things that we buy with credit, you know, that's additional money that can be invested, that can be saved, that is going back to a company because, again, of that credit score. You know, Equifax is going through all of their drama, yeah, when it comes to data breach affecting 143 million Americans. And for so many of us, credit is the thing that scares us to death.
So now you're getting closer to the issue. I'm not talking about credit scores. I'm not even talking about capitalism. I could give a flying hoop about credit scores. Financial literacy is somewhat boring, and I'm sort of the guy who got the federal government to make it the law. This is literally how the world works. So there's two things I want to say. One thing is that if you don't have inner capital, all the money in the world won't save you. So that's self-esteem and confidence. So after 350 years of slavery, 100 years of Jim Crow, ending in 1970, not 1870, where we've been told we weren't anything for 400 years, it's actually rational that 80% of us are clinically undiagnosed depressed. Now, if that's the case, and didn't get the memo on money, we never learned about free enterprise and capitalism, we're depressed, distressed, unhopeful, and don't have the tools to compete, now you have a 500 credit score neighborhood that has a check casher next to a payday loan lender, next to a rent-to-own store, next to a title lender, next to a liquor store, and we don't even think there's anything wrong with it because it's a state of depression.
Because that's what we think is normal.
It's our norm. And Ambassador Young said, to live in a system of free enterprise and not to understand the rules of free enterprise must be the very definition of slavery. I think we're living in slavery, economic slavery, right now. So, and by the way, that's white rural America too. So I'm not picking on anybody. I'm saying this is like 80% of Americans are in the invisible class. Mm-hmm. We're not seen by power and we don't see how we're going to get any. And that breeds resentment. And what I'm saying is there's a path forward. So, one, this is about self-esteem and confidence before it's ever about money. It's about role models and environment. You hang around 9 broke people, you'll be the 10th. Who are we hanging around? Are we hanging around entrepreneurs? Are we hanging around philanthropists? Are we hanging around builders? Who are we hanging around? It's very important. And then what does that code, what does that nurture? What are our priorities, right? So that's the first and probably the most powerful thing. And then that sort of defines how we spend our money, which is the point that you're making. But if I have low self-esteem, low confidence, crappy role models, a crappy environment, my aspirations in the toilet, I'm unhopeful, I'm probably going to spend my money in all the wrong places.
So somebody watching this, they're saying, I agree. I agree 100%. But I have no idea where to start.
Call me. My services are free. And that, I mean, we've opened 100 Hope Inside locations as of last week, the last one in Baltimore. And we're opening one every two weeks. Hope Inside of Bank branches, including black banks. We're in the City National Bank of New Jersey, a black bank in Whole Foods, also in New Jersey. We work with Carver Bank and a lot of other black banks. We were founded the black bank at the South Central LA Founders Bank in South Central. So we're in bank branches, grocery stores, big box retailers, houses of faith. We're in Atlanta Police Department because the police officers are filing for bankruptcy at twice the national average, making $48,000 with a gun and a badge and stressed out. That can't be good news for us. We're in Atlanta public schools because the teachers are stressed out. Most people are living from paycheck to paycheck and got too much month at the end of their money. Come to Operation Hope. Acknowledge that you have a problem. There's no shame in that game. Let us then, by the way, when you walk into a bank branch, Roland, they literally cannot tell you the truth by law and regulation. They're looking at your credit report. They know you're not going to be approved. Because of histories of redlining, which is real, now they're freaked out. So now they know you're 580. You apply for a mortgage. They can't tell you, please don't apply for this mortgage, for fear you're going to sue them. So they let you go through the entire process. Here's the magic. I'm now in their lobby. And my mission, because I don't work for them. My people don't work for them. They work for me. So you come over to me. We go, girl, your credit report is like a bus accident. Okay? We have a nice laugh. And I say, what's that? I don't know. Great. That's an error. Let me challenge that for you. When I challenge it, they must remove it. That pops your credit score 40 points. Now you go from 580 to 620. Now you're finally in the game. We get to 650 because now you have a charge off. We're going to call the people who charged it off 10 years ago. I know that somebody bought that for 5 cents on the dollar. You know the way the game is played. Mm-hmm. It was a $1,000 bill for a phone bill. It's now 50 bucks. We offer the guy, he wants 100 bucks. We offer him 200 bucks because I want his cell phone number, his direct phone number. I want to make him look like a hero. So he writes a letter on behalf of my client to say she's paid as agreed. And when it shows back up on a credit report, I want to write another letter. That's how you play this new game. We get a credit score up another 30 points. Now she's 650. What happens to her self-esteem? What happens to her confidence? Her trust in the system? Her belief in herself? This is something actually you can measure. I can't measure racism, man. I can't get in somebody's heart and change the way they feel about me.
Hold tight. Well, first of all, again, the memo. Pull the book up, please. The memo. Pull the book up. Pull the book up, the memo, Five Rules for Your Economic Liberation by John Hope Bryan. Trust me, you want to get that book. We'll be back in a moment right here at News One Now, TV One.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, now I got our panel talking about John Hope Bryan's book, The Memo. And so welcome everybody back. You made the point earlier, Ralph, and it's something that we've talked about on this show a lot. And when I did a panel for John that featured Ambassador Andrew Young, Bernice King, and others, I gave them an example. I said, if you go to the White House, and if you go by the White House, whether you've been inside or not, and if you stand outside and then you look at the whole grounds and you look to the left and you see there's only one federal agency that shares a lawn with the White House, Department of Treasury.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I said, if you want to understand America, that speaks itself, right? That you can literally walk 100 steps outside of the Treasury side door and you'd be in the East Wing of the White House. That's power, money, money, power. Mm. And a lot of times when we're talking about where we stand as African Americans, if you ask folks, okay, what's the most important issue? They go, oh, criminal justice, they go education. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, if you don't start with money,
the
rest of that stuff is absolutely secondary. Mm-hmm. In America, it begins with money.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, even from my position, like being an activist, it's a money thing. You know, when I look at just the Women's March, I'll give you an example. We raised $3 million in 2 months to put that effort on. So when people say it was so amazing, absolutely, because we never had a money issue one day. But when I think about some of the other efforts that we've led, some stuff walking from New York City to Washington, D.C., we had to call you every day and say, Roland, can you send $5? We can't eat. You know, we need help. Places to stay. It's very money rules everything, and so I think that it is super important that we start focusing on that. And it's really great that we're on this show this morning, and the theme has been money, because I feel like I'm walking out of here rich today.
That's right.
I'm ready.
Right. Yeah. Financial literacy is the key to everything.
Yeah.
You know, years ago I worked at Fannie Mae, and they had a partnership with John Hope Bryant, calling Banking on Our Future. And that program, we, the employees at Fannie Mae, were trained to go into D.C. public schools, elementary schools, high schools, and teach the children basic principles of money. You know, the rule of 72, what is interest, how is it compounded, you know, how do you get credit, how do you fix credit? You know, these are- and it's a shame that we had to do that because the parents didn't have that information.
Right. But this is a complex issue, but the one thing that's really super important is we always get these reports on how significant we are at consumerism. $1 trillion now, right? Whenever I hear that statistic, I think, who's measuring black investment, black wealth building vis-a-vis through when we die and how much we inherit? As a group, we don't inherit much compared to other groups. And so I wish we could get a quarter percent or more. No doubt about it. But if we could measure and change our psychology as a group of people to from consumerism to investorism, even a quarter of it, of that $1 trillion number, we could start to change our mindset.
But
as John said, we're depressed.
But Wendy, but first of all, that's obviously what John's focused on. But again, I can't get to the point of thinking, saving, and investing if I believe I have nothing to start with.
Right.
And I think that's why, for me, the basic thing is getting people to understand that. I mean, I was at a public housing complex in Bryan, Texas, a number of years ago, and this woman said, "I don't have any money." I said, "You do." She said, "I have no money. I don't know what you're talking about." I said, there's a bottle of soda in your hand. How much did that cost?" Mm-hmm. And she said, $1.79. I said, "You could have drank water." Mm-hmm. Now, somebody watching probably say, "Well, Roland, why are you denying her soda?" No, the point is, she did not have to drink the soda. Mm-hmm. She could have started her economic freedom with that $1.79. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is how we have to, I think, have to push people. Right. Wendy, go ahead.
Absolutely, and that's that financial literacy piece that we always talk about, is letting people know what they have, not just in their bank account, but that they possess, right? And to quote the great philosophers, the Locks and Little Kim, it's money, power, respect. It really goes in that order. Mm-hmm. If you have money, you will get power, and then you'll get respect. Mm-hmm. And as a community, as Black and brown people, we need to understand that. And sometimes we do not have fitting in important places because we fail to understand that our own power sometimes comes from our economic capital.
Again, folks, John Hope Bryant's book is a memo. It's a conversation we have on this show all the time, and we'll continue having as well. Got to go to a break right now. We come back. Second hour of News One Now, NAACP files suits against Trump over DACA. We'll explain with Derek Johnson of the NAACP.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
All right, folks, good morning. I'm Roland Martin. In the second hour of News One Now, Senate Republicans are again trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act because, frankly, Obama's name in it, called Obamacare. A new analysis finds that some of the key states that got Trump elected will be facing big federal cuts in the new bill, which could hurt the party in future elections. But you know, those broke folks don't realize what's going on here. They just keep saying get rid of Obamacare because his name is in it. We'll break that thing down on the show as well. Also, Hurricane Maria is just wreaking all sorts of havoc across the Caribbean. And Puerto Ricans are now having to clean up from the massive mess. We'll give you an update on that storm. Protests continue over Donald Trump's decision to end the DACA program, which protected children brought here legally from deportation if they meet certain criteria. Now the NAACP has sued Trump, who was already facing legal action over the issue on several other fronts. Still I Rise, that's the theme of this year's Congressional Black Caucus 47th Annual Legislative Conference coming up. We've got some highlights of the first day and tell you about the second day, which is today. Plus, it's What the Hell Thursday. Well, that's really every day we talk about the Trump administration. But we've got some crazy stories for you with, of course, our friends in social media. It's time to bring the funk. News One Now, TV One. Let's go. Crazy. All right, y'all. Yesterday, President Barack Obama was in New York for a conference, and he had a few things to say about Republicans' efforts to repeal his signature accomplishment as president, that is the Affordable Care Act. And he said it's just befuddling how Republicans just want to constantly try over and over and over again to repeal it, but they really don't have a smart replacement. This is the president, former president, yesterday.
The legislation that we passed was full of things that still need to be fixed. It wasn't perfect, but it was better. And so when I see people trying to undo that hard-won progress for the 50th or 60th time with bills that would raise costs or reduce coverage or roll back protections for older Americans or people with pre-existing conditions, the cancer survivor, the expecting mom, or the child with autism or asthma, for whom coverage once again would be almost unattainable, it is aggravating. And all of this being done without any demonstrable economic or actuarial or plain common sense rationale, it frustrates. And it's certainly frustrating to have to mobilize every couple of months to keep our leaders from inflicting real human suffering on our constituents.
Of course, you know, here we always talk about hashtag Trump Lies Matter, and it's no shock he would be lying about the Affordable Care Act, the ability, the effort to try to replace it.
I think there's tremendous support for it. I think it's actually much better than the previous shot, which was very sadly let down.
Okay, yeah, it's worse than the previous bill. You know, the previous bill, only 14% of Americans actually supported, and massive number of healthcare organizations are against this. March of Dimes, American Lung Association, American Cancer Society, American Heart Association. I mean, we can go on and on and on. Insurance companies, hey, y'all know something is up when the insurance companies hate it, the hospital associations hate it, and the healthcare groups hate it, but for Mitch McConnell and his band of Merry Warriors, it's all good. It's really no big deal. Let's go to our panel joining us, of course, A. Scott Bolden, of course, who heads the National Bar Association's PAC and also legal analyst, Tamika Mallory, national co-chair of the Women's March, Ralph Chittums, Republican strategist, principal of Black Elephant Consultants, Wendy Osefo, political analyst and professor of education, Johns Hopkins University. This is the, here's the most fundamental thing that bothers me the most. If you believe in it, debate it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you think that this bill is important, you think it works, fine. Put it out there.
That's right.
Let the CBO score it. Have a vigorous debate, but don't have a hearing in the Homeland Security hearing, where this ain't got a damn thing to do with Homeland Security. You literally have a Senate Health Committee that's not debating this. But they don't want to do that, Ralph. And so that, to me, if you need any proof of how fraudulent the bill is when they are afraid to debate it.
Well, one question that I have is, President Obama has now clearly stated on multiple occasions that the ACA as passed was flawed. Where have the Democrats stepped up and said, here is how we propose to fix it?
When are you going to answer my question?
Wow.
No.
Ralph,
350 Republican amendments were accepted during 15 months of debate. You can't offer an amendment if there's no debate. You can't offer an amendment if there's no conversation. So I'm going to ask the question again, and I would appreciate an answer. If this bill is so good, why will your party not have an actual open debate? What are they afraid of? Answer that question, not try to deflect to Democrats.
Well, first things first, as I said in the previous segment, nobody knows everything that's involved in this bill.
So why won't they have a debate?
Ask him. I'm not Karnak.
Are you a Republican?
I'm not a mind reader. You want to know why they don't want to have a debate? Get Mitch McConnell in here. Get Cassidy in here. Get Graham in here.
First of all,
I'm not a mind reader. I don't define things. Ralph,
do you support this bill?
As it stands now, no.
Do you believe this bill should be openly debated in the United States Senate?
I believe every bill should always be debated, regardless of who's in the White House.
And why do you think Republicans are scared to have a debate about this bill? Why?
You want my speculation?
Hell no, I want your answer. You said, well, I'm asking you.
They honestly, I think they want to get a legislative win.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Honestly.
So I think they want. So I had nothing to do with health care. It's about a win.
A win.
For some of them, right. I do believe that some of them are true believers, and they believe that what they're doing is right. I've articulated on this show for how long, Roland, that repeal and replace was nothing more than a soundbite used during a campaign cycle because it sounded good.
Right.
Here is the truth of the matter.
Right.
The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it, is never, ever, ever going to be repealed, period. I have always said what is going to happen to the ACA is it is going to be restructured. It is going to be reworked.
Repaired.
Now, so that goes back to what I started with. If the Democrats are now admitting that the ACA was flawed, why have they not? This is not absolving Republicans now. Why have they not then stepped forward with their plan to fix it?
Wendy, this is what you have here. This has nothing to do with health care.
No.
It has nothing to do with helping Americans. Mm-hmm. What this is simply folks who despise mm-hmm. President Barack Obama yep. and who want to do away with the signature piece of
his legacy. Absolutely. I cannot have said it any better. You just crystallized it with that statement. What we're doing here and what we're watching is political football. Mm-hmm. And they are playing football with people's lives.
That's right.
And the president has been in office for, 7 months, a little bit over? He has no legislative wins. And we are now up against the midterms. They need legislative wins. They have to have a legislative win in order for them to be able to go back to their home states and say, this is what I've done. And that is what we're watching here. And for anyone to be able to adhere to this pervasive narrative that this bill is going to be better when it cuts $214 billion, when it's going to raise premiums, when people are going to lose their health care, when 34 states are losing billions of dollars. Anyone to sit here and stand by that, that is just completely against what humanity stands for. And we have to be honest about that. And that is the truth. And the fact that Republicans think it's okay to play political football with people's lives, especially people who are black and brown, people who are elderly, people who are pregnant, people who have terminal illnesses. Excuse me, we need to have a deeper conversation because this has gone beyond lives. This is now morality.
This is very basic to me, Tamika.
That's right.
If you don't want to debate something, if you want to limit it to 90 seconds or 2 minutes,
mm-hmm.
you want to sneak this through because you do not want the people to know what's in it.
Absolutely. And, you know, to add to your list of all the things that's wrong with it, just to be a woman and have female genitalia means that you're a pre-existing condition.
That's right.
So this is a very,
to be pregnant
very,
just, is pre-existing.
It's a pre-existing condition. So what are we talking about? The bottom line is, like everything else, they want to be able to ram something down our throats. They don't care who it affects. And you know why? Because they have good health insurance. So how about that?
They got great health insurance.
Congress should have to use the same insurance as every other American.
For all the
they
reasons
need to implement that rule.
On that side of the panel, there's one other thing that we're not missing, but we're aware of, but is telling. They don't have the votes on the Republican side of the GOP
in order
to pass.
We are not going to make that mistake because right now they're sitting at about 47, 48.
All they
need is pick up two more.
Yeah.
And so the odds
have never been different. Regardless of the version, what I'm saying to you is,
let me tell you something about odds. Howard University beat UNLV in football, and they were 35 point underdogs.
Listen,
don't y'all go
I'm
with
not,
odds.
I'm not predicting anything. What I'm saying is, the odds and the numbers have always been minuscule, and this is the sixth version. What I'm saying to you
is that the Republicans, whether it's the Freedom Caucus, the Tuesday group, or moderates, right, have problems with these various versions of the health care bill. And that's a problem. Until you get to that magic number, till you get to the end zone, that makes it clear that it's a bad bill on top of all the other reasons
I'm
that you
telling get. Y'all. Don't fall for the okie doke.
And I'm not.
Don't listen to nothing Scott just said.
Ready, right?
Don't do not get don't get caught up in the odds.
I agree.
It failed the previous 58 times. I'm telling you right now, if the Senate passes this bill,
that's right.
They will send to the House, and the House will pass this like a quick, fast, in a hurry, so they can have Trump sign it. So they can say they appealed it.
If they pass this bill, Democrats win the midterms.
Bottom line is,
pull your phone up next to you, get on it, and start calling.
Exactly.
Pull the phone up. Number, please.
That's right.
Phone number up. Number to call is 202-224-3121. Y'all should have the number. That's right. There we go. 202-224-3121. Don't you sit your behind at home. And then go, well, I'm going to let Tamika do it or the NAACP. No. You better pick the phone up and let your United States senator know.
That's right.
It don't matter if you're from a state, you got two Republicans. Let them know. Blow their phones up to share your thoughts about this because, again, our health is at stake. All right, folks, Puerto Rico's in the dark and trying to assess the damage from the strongest hurricane to hit the island in 80 years. Electricity is out across the island of Puerto Rico. The energy grid took such a severe blow from deadly Hurricane Maria that restoring power to everyone may take months, according to the island's governor. There are mandatory curfews being instituted also. Folks in the U.S. Virgin Islands also hit hard as well as they try to recover. Talk about, a massive, massive storm back to back. That has not happened in a very, very long time. So certainly our thoughts and prayers go out to them. It's going to be a massive rebuilding process for many of those Caribbean nations. All right, folks, coming up next on News One Now, we have more about the NAACP filing a lawsuit against President Trump this week over his decision to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program known as DACA. That's next, News One Now, TV One.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
NAACP has become the latest organization to sue Donald Trump over his choice to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program known as DACA. It is also suing U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions and others in the Trump administration on behalf of people of color eligible for DACA. Yesterday in New York, several elected leaders were among 10 people arrested outside of Trump Tower. They were protesting Trump's decision to end the program, protecting immigrants who arrived in the U.S. illegally as children from being deported. The NAACP notes that more than 80% of DACA recipients are Mexican, and more than 50,000 others who are eligible for DACA have African and Caribbean origins. Joining us right now is Derek Johnson, interim president and CEO of the NAACP. What, Derek, is the legal basis for why suing Trump?
Well, we believe it's a violation of due process and administrative acts. For the NAACP, we've always recognized the African diaspora. Mm-hmm. We have individuals who migrate here from the Caribbean, Jamaica, particularly the African continent, and all of us come here from somewhere else. And if this country give a promise, we should honor that promise. We should not be in the business of changing the administration. People rely on a promise, and then they have put themselves at risk. We're talking about individuals who are productive citizens. And as a result of that, we felt it necessary to take action.
It was interesting you have attorneys generals who are also suing Trump over this. We saw how they lost a significant number of cases when it came to the ban on Muslims as well with the travel ban. They had to go back and change it. This administration, especially Jeff Sessions, I mean, this is what he's always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And they really don't care if you and others sue.
Well, the issue here is this administration is appealing to the lowest common denominator of this nation. Our goal of the NAACP is to ensure that everyone have equal protection under the law. If we don't have that, we have chaos. We have always operated from a space that the legal principles that we all are governed by should apply equally, and if they do not, we should take action. We cannot stand idly by and watch not only individuals from Latin America, but understand that the diaspora of individuals from Africa also will be impacted and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. You know, Roland, one of the most important things about this particular lawsuit is that DACA, it is, and the administration rather, is being challenged. Remember, the 10 attorney generals never sued under to challenge DACA because the administration backed down. The administration never tried to defend this executive order, so we don't know whether it's legal or illegal. But this lawsuit right here by NAACP, hopefully the judiciary is going to answer those questions once and for all, because the administration could have defended this. They could have put forth a defense to it and gotten a judicial decision. They didn't want to because of their political core base. They put it to the House and Senate. It's not clear what they're going to do, no matter all the rhetoric that we're hearing from both sides. And so this lawsuit's really important. It'll be interesting to see what the feds say in response to this lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And so we need to watch closely. I haven't seen the lawsuit. I don't know whether you're asking for a TRO or any type of injunctive relief, because if you did, or if the lawsuit does, you get an answer pretty even quicker in the federal judiciary.
And we are. We are exiting.
Terrific. Yeah.
You know, understanding that we have three branches of government. Mm-hmm. The reason why the past administration issued this executive order, because Congress refused to act. Mm-hmm. And as a result, President Obama acted.
And not clear they're going to act.
And it's not clear they're going to act. Right. And so we keep operating as if there are two branches of government. There's a third branch of government. And NAACP said we want the third branch of government to speak to this issue. Because when you give a contract and people rely on that contract, this nation, just like individuals, should be required to follow through on that contract.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I just want to say publicly that we really appreciate what you're doing and what the NAACP is doing. Because doing nothing is not an option.
Exactly.
So, thank you.
And as a Nigerian and a Nigerian immigrant who came to this country myself when I was very young, I also appreciate what you guys are doing, because oftentimes the face of immigration, oftentimes the face of immigrants is from those from Spanish-speaking countries.
Right.
And I love the fact that you made it a point to say, no, there's other immigrants from Africa and the Caribbean.
Yeah. I was going to say, and that is so important, because
Absolutely.
The pushback that I've received from people from black folks,
yes,
you know, honestly, is that why are we in this issue?
Yes,
it's not about us. And I think having the NAACP take this step helps them to really be able to open up and understand that this actually impacts our community. I say to people all the time, 116th Street in Harlem, White Plains
right.
Road in the
exactly.
Bronx, that's
right.
where our people live, who
right.
some of them are not even here under DACA.
That's
so
right.
what do you think is going to happen when they come looking for the DACA folk in your community?
And also what a lot of our folks have to understand is who's also aligning with voting. So folks from the Dominican Republic, folks from Puerto Rico, folks from many of those countries. And so understand all that impacts. Derek, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much. What can you do to achieve economic liberation? Entrepreneur and author John Hope Bryan has some answers. We'll break down his five rules to follow. Plus, we'll have the first day of Congressional Black Caucus Foundation, ALC. All of that right here, News One Now, TV One. And it's 21 minutes after the hour.
Your centerpiece for black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
John Hope Bryan is a highly successful entrepreneur, a philanthropic investor, financial literacy expert, and the founder and CEO of Operation Hope, an organization that works to make the free enterprise system work for poor and working class communities. And he's also best-selling author. His new book is called The Memo, Five Rules for Your Economic Liberation. And welcome back to the show.
Hey, man. Nice to be here.
Good seeing you. We've talked about this beforehand, this notion of the memo. What is the basis for you when you say we have not gotten the memo?
We're brilliant. We've been doing so much with so little for so long, we can almost do anything with nothing. Anytime the rules are published, the playing field is level. Sports, entertainment, the arts, we kill it. But after the Civil War, Abraham Lincoln, 1865, created a bank called the Freedmen's Bank to teach freed slaves about money. He was killed the next month. Nobody knows about the bank. Frederick Douglass tried to run it, put $10,000 of his own money into the bank. People think he was an abolitionist only. He was a businessman, owned property in Baltimore, worth $5 million, this man. And when it failed, he said the failure of this bank did more to set freed slaves back in America than 10 more years of slavery. My point is, and he goes back, now you go to 1968 with Dr. King and Ambassador Andrew Young in Memphis, Poor People's Campaign, King gets killed on the balcony as he pivots toward poverty. Mm-hmm. So my point is this. It's not like we're dumb or we're stupid. It's what we don't know that we don't know that's killing us, but we think we know. We never got the memo. There's a memo on money. There's a memo on capitalism and free enterprise and ownership and wealth creation. Power, wealth, and aspiration are things no one teaches you. I wanted to deliver the memo, so we renamed the Freedmen's Bank. Secretary Jack Lew did, but at my request last year. It's across from the Treasury Department now. Your folks can Google search that right now, see we did that. But then we put Hope Inside locations on the ground.
They already know. We were there.
So we're raising credit scores 120 points because nothing changes your life more than God or love than moving your credit score 120 points today.
Now, here's what's interesting when we talk about this idea of not getting the memo. So somebody will say, well, yeah, but that was Madam C.J. Walker and that was A.G. Gaston. There were different. Yes, there were different individuals. What you're talking about is a collective, and not just a collective, yeah, but also a generational mindset that goes from one generation to the next.
It's also a problem that we got to go back 150 years to think about, whether it's Frederick Douglass or whether it's Gaston or Madam C.J. Walker, or we keep talking about this riot in a little place in Ohio. It's not like this has happened last week. Where's our Bill Gates? Where's our Steve Jobs? That's in the last 10 years, right? So the fact that we have these stories that are really antidotes and not symptomatic in our own community is the problem. Here, let me drop the mic. The average credit score in America is 700. 15% of white people have a credit score below 620. That's basically Trump's voters. Mm-hmm. Those are rural, white, poor, distressed. They're dying faster than anybody else. 44% of black folks are brilliant people below 620. End of subject. You can't access the credit markets. You can't get a home loan, you can't be a small business owner. And then when you try, when the markets push the envelope, like in 2009, mm-hmm, and give you a loan you shouldn't have, we default because we don't have the tools, the memo, to do for ourselves. So what gives me great sort of hope is that not like we got the memo and we screwed it up, we never got the memo. And we want to deliver it at scale. We will deliver it at scale.
And for the person, you know, at home who goes, okay, so I mean, I hear you, John, talking about 120 credit points, but that's real in terms of, because when you talk about the amount of money that we spend on interest when it comes to cars, when it comes to houses, when it comes to the other things that we buy with credit, you know, that's additional money that can be invested, that can be saved, that is going back to a company because, again, of that credit score. You know, Equifax is going through all of their drama, yeah, when it comes to data breach affecting 143 million Americans. And for so many of us, credit is the thing that scares us to death.
So now you're getting closer to the issue. I'm not talking about credit scores. I'm not even talking about capitalism. I could give a flying hoop about credit scores. Financial literacy is somewhat boring, and I'm sort of the guy who got the federal government to make it the law. This is literally how the world works. So there's two things I want to say. One thing is that if you don't have inner capital, all the money in the world won't save you. So that's self-esteem and confidence. So after 350 years of slavery, 100 years of Jim Crow, ending in 1970, not 1870, where we've been told we weren't anything for 400 years, it's actually rational that 80% of us are clinically undiagnosed depressed. Now, if that's the case, and we didn't get the memo on money, we never learned about free enterprise and capitalism, we're depressed, distressed, unhopeful, and don't have the tools to compete, now you have a 500 credit score neighborhood that has a check casher next to a payday loan lender, next to a rent-to-own store, next to a title lender, next to a liquor store, and we don't even think there's anything wrong with it because it's a state of depression.
Because that's what we think is normal.
It's our norm. And Ambassador Young said to live in a system of free enterprise and not to understand the rules of free enterprise must be the very definition of slavery. I think we're living in slavery, economic slavery, right now. So, and by the way, that's white rural America too. So I'm not picking on anybody. I'm saying this is like 80% of Americans are in the invisible class. Mm-hmm. We're not seen by power and we don't see how we're going to get any. And that breeds resentment. And what I'm saying is there's a path forward. So in one, this is about self-esteem and confidence before it's ever about money. It's about role models and environment. You hang around 9 broke people, you'll be the 10th. Who are we hanging around? Are we hanging around entrepreneurs? Are we hanging around philanthropists? Are we hanging around builders? Who are we hanging around? It's very important. And then what does that
What is that nurture? What are our priorities, right? So that's the first and probably the most powerful thing. This and then that sort of defines how we spend our money, which is the point that you're making. But if I have low self-esteem, low confidence, crappy role models, a crappy environment, my aspirations in the toilet, I'm unhopeful, I'm probably going to spend my money in all the wrong places.
So somebody watching this, they're saying, I agree 100%. But I have no idea where to start.
Call me. My services are free. And that, I mean, we've opened 100 Hope Inside locations as of last week, the last one in Baltimore, and we're opening one every two weeks. Hope Inside of bank branches, including black banks. We're in the City National Bank of New Jersey, a black bank, in Whole Foods also in New Jersey. We work with Carver Bank and a lot of other black banks. We were founded a black bank at the South Central LA Founders Bank in South Central. So we're in bank branches, grocery stores, big box retailers, houses of faith. We're in Atlanta Police Department because the police officers are filing for bankruptcy at twice the national average, making $48,000 with a gun and a badge and stressed out. That can't be good news for us. We're in Atlanta public schools because the teachers are stressed out. Mm-hmm. Most people are living from paycheck to paycheck and got too much month at the end of their money. Come to Operation Hope. Acknowledge that you have a problem. There's no shame in that game. Let us then, by the way, when you walk into a bank branch, Roland, they literally cannot tell you the truth by law and regulation. They're looking at your credit report. They know you're not going to be approved. Because of histories of redlining, which is real, now they're freaked out. So now they know you're 580. You apply for a mortgage. They can't tell you, please don't apply for this mortgage for fear you're going to sue them. So they let you go through the entire process. Here's the magic. I'm now in their lobby. And my mission, because I don't work for them. My people don't work for them. They work for me. So you come over to me. We go, girl, your credit report is like a bus accident. Okay? We have a nice laugh. And I say, what's that? I don't know. Great. That's an error. Let me challenge that for you. When I challenge it, they must remove it. That pops your credit score 40 points. Now you go from 580 to 620. Now you're finally in the game. We get to 650 because now you have a charge off. We're going to call the people who charged that off 10 years ago. I know that somebody bought that for 5 cents on the dollar. You know the way the game is played. Mm-hmm. It was a $1,000 bill for a phone bill. It's now 50 bucks. We offer the guy, he wants 100 bucks. We offer him 200 bucks because I want his cell phone number, his direct phone number. I want to make him look like a hero. So he writes a letter on behalf of my client to say she's paid as agreed. And when it shows back up on a credit report, I want to write another letter. That's how you play this new game. We get a credit score up another 30 points. Now she's 650. What happens to her self-esteem? What happens to her confidence? Her trust in the system, her belief in herself. This is something actually you can measure. I can't measure racism, man. I can't get in somebody's heart and change the way they feel about me.
Hold tight. Well, first of all, again, the memo. Pull the book up, please. The memo. Pull the book up. The memo. Five Rules for Your Economic Liberation by John Hope Bryan. Trust me, you want to get that book. We'll be back in a moment right here, News One Now, TV One.
Don't leave.
My audience knows very well what we talk about.
I know the consequences.
A second hour of News One Now starts next.
Are you serious?
Don't you just love it when there's video?
News One Now continues on TV One.
More than 9,000 people have descended on the nation's capital for the 47th annual CBC Foundation Conference. Features over 70 public policy forums and, of course, fun and entertainment. This year's theme is Still I Rise. Yesterday, everything got kicked off, and I'm hosting several panels this week, and of course, hosted one on yesterday, sponsored by Congressman Al Green, Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Sorry, Scott. You couldn't get in.
Your cap is
so there were no cappers on our panel. So we talked about the idea of policy and protest in this age of Trump. Here is some of that conversation.
We are very clear within the activist community, and I use this analogy all the time. Police violence is not our only issue. Political corruption is not our only issue, and I often liken it to a tree. We are talking about multiple branches on a tree that is rooted in systemic oppression and racism. The roots are rotten, and so therefore the fruits of the tree are rotten, right? And they're rotten in inequitable education, they're rotten in unequal housing, in the prison industrial complex, and all of the things that we're talking about. Our goal is not to break off a single branch or to fix one piece of fruit. It's to uproot the entire tree, right? ball. We can't stop at the unrooting. We can't stop at the battling. We actually have to plant in its place something that bears fruit for all of us.
We can't just keep showing up for CBC and having a good time for 4 days and not doing something for the other 361. And so the reality is, what are we doing when we go back home? How are you going to be activating and mobilizing folks when you go back home? What are you going to do to go to the Hill and tell these folks in Senate that how dare you even talk about trying to take my health care away again? And make sure we have to be tactical. We can't just be about the party. We got to be about the protests.
We often talk about Dr. King said this or this in the speech, but not what actually led to that. What were all the pieces that went behind it? Most people don't even realize that he sent advance teams into any city before he even showed up. He didn't just walk in. He was very clear on the lay of the land. And so for folks here who are going to go back, you worked on the national campaign as well. Some many say caught fire and in some ways he tried to have to catch up to where the movement was. Talk about how even how critical that aspect is in terms of understanding that you have to constantly be strategizing in the next step, in the next step, as opposed to it's just going to happen.
If there's one thing I think, you know, this talented and elite group of folks that are in this room and attending this conference this week should understand is that we have to stop going and talking to our communities and talk with them. Because those are the pieces that are going to help us put together a real plan that's going to move the needle. And that has been helpful to me. I mean, we came out with a very robust racial justice platform that was informed by activists. I just didn't let a couple white people from Vermont write the platform. Like, these were young black people and brown people who said, this is what we'd like to see. And going forward, I think that is what we need. That is what the party has been doing. They have held a number of listening sessions, had meetings. When a group of black women got together and wrote a letter to the DNC noting that we do not feel as though you value us and we will not continue to be with you unless you start talking to and listening to us, they started having conversations.
Think about all of the institutional power sitting in this room right now. We got SVPs in this room, VPs, CEOs, COOs. What would happen if we banded together? Some of our companies, for example, that we work for, fund the prison industrial complex. What if inside of our companies we banded together as people of conscience and said, we're not going to take this anymore, and here's how we're going to move within this company until we actually shift, right? That's the kind of power that we give away every single day when we don't think about all of the creative ways that we can organize, both at the voting booth and beyond.
The Martin Luther King Memorial, we wanted to make sure that the memorial continued as a living memorial. And so we do this luncheon to honor members of Congress, civic leaders, as well as business leaders every year for what they do in the community. So today we honored three. We honored Emmanuel Cleaver and Congressman Lacey Clay, as well as Secretary Interior Zinke. We honored Secretary Zinke for the sole purpose because of diversity and appointing two females to top positions at the Interior Department. So we're pleased at his actions thus far. The most important part for me today was seeing the crowd and seeing everyone here satisfied with the comments that everybody made, not about the honorees, but in fact about Dr. King, about the tenets of justice, hope, democracy, and love that lives on here, and how much we need love, not only in this country, but indeed the world.
Also last night at Harmon Hall, the Congressional Black Caucus also honored several folks in the arts, including Spike Lee and Yolanda Adams. And of course, yesterday there, I caught up with Spike Lee right before the program started.
Spike, we're here at CBC 2017. You've been honored, and you got the jacket with every movie you've done, or was this an ode to Michael Jackson?
Nah, this is my ex jacket.
Oh, there you go. That's what I'm saying. Okay. You know, I saw the ornaments here, you know, because, you know, Michael was good for that.
Well, it's a homage, a shout out, How you doing?
Man, I'm good, staying busy.
How's Houston, huh? How are you?
Houston good, family's good, everybody's good. Nobody has any problems. Thanks for asking. Everybody's good.
God bless. You know, Puerto Rico's without power and...
U.S. Virgin Islands being hit hard. Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett, who's here, she said they got hit hard yesterday.
You know, Mother Earth is angry now. Looks like there might be tsunami in Japan. The earthquake in Mexico.
Climate change is real.
Yeah.
Even though some people ignore it.
Are we in this town?
Dude, this, trust me, it's crazy being here. A couple of things I want to ask you.
Yes, sir.
Something sports and music related. Okay. When I saw the story, I said, I got to ask Spike this. Jay-Z telling the NFL, no thank you. Standing with Colin Kaepernick.
What happened?
They asked him to do the Super Bowl. He told them no.
What? I didn't hear that.
Yes.
But where's he from? Where's Jay-Z from?
Where's he from?
The Republic of Brooklyn. You know how we do? You don't go for that.
No.
Jay-Z's from the Republic of Brooklyn. Marcy Projects.
It's interesting how you see more players who are sitting down taking a knee. You look at what Tom Brady said. He deserves a shot. Could have come out a little stronger.
And Aaron Rodgers before that.
Right. I mean, folks are now realizing Colin Kaepernick, they're making an example out of him.
Come on, you look at these guys, man. The New York Jets, the quarterbacks they got, good God.
Jacksonville just signed a former Giants quarterback who's only thrown 9 passes his whole career.
What about the guy from Chicago? He was retired.
Jay Cutler.
Cutler.
Who sucked.
They brought him out of retirement and then gave him a $10 million contract. Oh, my God. Look, it's the word is collusion. The word is collusion. And a lot of these NFL owners are Republicans. A lot of them wrote $1 million checks to the Agent Orange's account. Not account, but you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So,
for the inauguration.
The inauguration. So it's rigged. I mean, it's straight out. I'm going to go with Mike Tyson right now. It's some skullduggery. Subterfuge.
Real quick, I know we're about to start the program here. Man, we talked at Essence, but she's got to have it coming up. I'm hyped, man.
Thanksgiving, all 10 episodes directed by me. It's good. It's very good.
You're going to have black folks eating turkey, standing at home, just binging the whole time.
Because we're not watching football, so she's going to have it.
See, there you go right there.
Oh, man.
They've always good seeing you. And thanks for the call the other day.
Oh, no problem. All right, man.
All right, folks, that was Spike Lee there. Real quick, one of the things that I've said about CBC Foundation, first of all, a lot of different great policy discussions, but I still challenge them. You have got to take the database of the number of people who come in here and provide them with the timely updates on policy mm-hmm. and bills that we talked about. Now, they can't endorse bills being a 501c3, but you can certainly stay in contact with people after, so in between AOC, so they know what's going on.
Right.
That, to me, is still a failing.
Right, and what to do. I mean, I think the problem that we have, and Michael Blake talked about it, is that we leave with no assignment, nothing to do. You know, Ruby Davis said at one of the gatherings, first convenings, where Harry Belafonte pulled people together, when she talked about leaving with no assignment. And it is unfortunate that we come to these gatherings, mm-hmm. and then when we leave, people are still like, now, what am I supposed
Absolutely.
To do?
Right.
Okay. But it's hard, and going back to what you said, it's hard for the foundation to give assignments, because then they have to walk that fine line of partisanship.
No.
But the information,
that's the key.
Information is power. And, you know, the same way, you know, nonprofits can't get involved in direct campaigns, but they can get involved
on issues.
Yeah.
And that's the key, on issues. And to me, that, I think, is the piece there. And you've been on panels that I've done. I drive folks on that, you know, challenge them in terms of what to do next. Every conversation is not just, we're going to talk. It's no. What's next?
Lincoln,
what's next? When
together.
You leave here,
right.
Where do you go?
Right.
Exactly. But saying the foundation can't be politically active, it's a political foundation. I understand it's status and what have you, but the CBC are as political as they get. So I think that's a bit of a cop-out. Listen, if we're not organized about what we do after the ALC, then it's just a party.
Right.
And that's our problem. And I've been on Facebook talking about it. What type of CBC weekend are you going to have? We need all hands on deck. The Republicans control 3 houses. You got midterms in 2018. Are we going to party every night and leave with no mission or organization? We don't need the ALC Foundation or the members of the CBC to organize for us. We can organize ourselves
Absolutely.
At the grassroots level.
But
leave and we don't have that plan because we come here to party as opposed to protest and community organizing.
But folks need a role.
The for most of those 9,000 is to come to party.
Right, Capitalists.
It's not.
That's right. There you go.
Across the board.
That's right.
Wendy, go ahead.
And and you know, y'all be shimmying to the club. Don't shimmy to the club.
I'm gonna slide in shade. Wendy, go ahead.
Yes.
What I was gonna say is, as an educator, as a professor, I just find it so disheartening when you have a mass group of people, you're supposed to give them an assignment, you're supposed to have a takeaway, and I think that that is something that should be discussed on panels, which is really important.
Well, don't worry about it. Well, first, it happens in my sessions. I'll give you some homework when we're done.
That's right.
All right. You ain't going to pass. All right. Wendy, Ralph, Tamika, Scott makes a bunch. We come back. It's What the Hell Thursday. Let's have a little fun. I'll smack a few more cappers around. News 1 Now, TV 1.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, y'all, what the hell stories? Some of the craziest stories of the week on social media. Let's get it with our usual suspects. Media personalities, Aruba Tommy, Lord This Jacket. We got Black and Bougie, Ashley DeMille, and comedian Lamar King. All right, y'all, when it comes to, y'all, I'm serious. I had to tell y'all to talk about this video. When it comes to partying, black folks will make it fit no matter what. I saw this video. Y'all, somebody in Atlanta turned a basement into a roller rink. Roll the video. Oh, I love this video.
That's a party. What you mean?
Yo, they were getting it in.
Oh, my goodness.
Wooden floors. Hey, wait a minute. Ain't that much? Hey. But and everybody know how to get it.
Oh, I love it. JB style right there.
Everybody knows.
We used to do that when I was little. We had that. We ain't had wooden floors like that, but we used to skate in our basement.
Y'all had wooden floors? Y'all had cement floors? Everybody. Okay, so who on the panel knows how to roller skate?
I do.
Not like that, though. That's JB style.
I went every Sunday after church, 2:30, was skate rink time.
And you had them big color puff balls on your skates. I sure did. I had the
big pink puff balls.
Pink bricks.
And my skates were white. Ooh. And I could bag it up.
Lord.
So I can go forward. I can't go backwards.
I
can go forward. I can't go backwards. And I can't stop.
They were spinning. They were dipping. They were getting it.
That was the basement.
Basement of the house.
I want to know who. I don't want to come.
Huh?
If your party ain't like that, I don't want to come.
Okay, you're right. Okay, now y'all got to have a little fun with this one here. Now, I also saw this story here. A woman was arrested, y'all, for domestic battery after punching her husband in the face.
Wow.
Here's why. Because he interrupted her while she was pleasuring herself. According to the police report, 42-year-old Flavia A. Higgins, I guess it was, a home alone handling her business when her estranged husband, Gary, came home and heard some strange noises in the bedroom. Thinking his wife was in bed with another man, Garrett barged into the bedroom.
As he should.
And as a result, she began to attack him. She was later released with charges being dropped. She was like, look, man, I was in the middle of something. Ashley, you going to start
clutching
this one.
My pearls.
Isn't it playing that hard? She was playing that hard.
My barbed wire, but I'm
from the bedroom.
Yeah. Well,
she was pleasuring herself. She beat him up
when he came in. She wasn't who he thought he was going to be, or he was supposed to be. She was imagining somebody else. That's why she smacked him.
Child,
he kicked the door and like, what are you doing? She's like, what are you doing?
Take care of business.
I'm getting ready to say something is wrong.
They were living in separate bedrooms. They're strange.
Yeah.
But. I mean, she was literally up like,
I was
in the middle of something, and I was going somewhere.
And she probably ain't got there yet.
Somebody was bound to get shot. It was inevitable.
Y'all notice Ashley's mighty quiet on this topic.
Why is she blushing? No, it's the good makeup that I got on.
Why she keep flipping her hair?
Because first of all, it's just certain things you just don't do. Okay.
What you mean? Which part?
They in separate bedrooms. That's when the door's closed. It's off limits.
What about her doing what she was doing or him busting in there?
Mind her business. He heard a noise.
Yeah, he heard a noise.
He heard lots of noises.
I'm ready to say. The noise, if he heard help, yeah. But those other noises are off limits. He knew what that noise meant.
But he thought somebody was in there.
He heard somebody
playing.
He thought she was a damsel in distress.
You know what I mean?
Right. He maybe wanted to join.
She might have been getting attacked, and that's what he thought he had to come in there and save.
Oh, she was getting attacked, all right. The fingers was getting to work. Oops.
You ain't gonna be in my bedroom making noises and the door closed.
Why not?
Oh, no.
Honey, if it ain't no noise, it ain't nothing going on.
No, he's talking about yourself. Like, you come on this man.
But that's what I'm saying.
And making all the doors closed in my house anyway, first off.
You can't get me quiet.
Well, what kind of noise you make?
Oh. Shelly, pull up my
Lamar did not say Shelly, pull up my iPad.
iPhone 8, please, my i10.
Your iPhone 4C.
Let's go to that 11, Shelly.
Oh, my God.
Cut to the baby. Cut to the baby.
Let me go.
Well, look at you. That's right. Bad Bougie having flashbacks. Let me go to a break. I'll be back. News 1, not TV 1.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, welcome back. Hey, the Congressional Black Caucus spouses have brought back the fashion show. Tommy, you a little upset you didn't get a call?
No, I'm going to be a walk-on.
Oh.
To the fashion
Tommy,
show.
Tommy, this ain't sports. This is not like you can walk onto a team. You just can't just walk onto the fashion show.
Look, I can walk onto the fashion show and work it.
I'm hosting it, so you will not walk onto the fashion show.
Oh, you will get me in that fashion show.
I'm going to be on stage. What you want?
I'm going to be on stage right next to you.
Oh, Lord, here we go.
So Lamont, is there a possibility you will walk onto the?
Definitely not.
Fashion show.
Fashion is not my thing.
Because you're blinged out today with a shirt.
No, but what I am going to do is I'm going to be leading a boycott for your party on Saturday because what I learned from Scott Bolden is we're doing way too much partying at CBC. So I'm going to be outside picketing.
This is what black folk do.
Be picketing your
party.
So Lamont, are you upset?
Shut it down.
So Lamont, you upset you haven't gotten an invite? Is that
probably. That's probably so. Yeah.
That's,
so I'm going to have to shut that down.
But a t-shirt like that, you ain't
We're celebrating for the culture, man. We're doing this for hip-hop. We're doing this for hip-hop.
What is it?
We're doing it for hip-hop. 40 years of hip-hop, baby. This is all the elements of hip-hop.
That's bad, LeMay. We can't even read it.
That's not LeMay. Because you're not for the culture.
You
understand?
You're not from the culture. But you're right.
You understand me?
Okay.
Lamont, you didn't get an invite to Roland's
No, but I will be there. Like I said, we're forming
a
shutdown. We're shutting it down around 10:30.
Oh, you can't
You blocked it. Oh, yeah, y'all should be at 10:30. We're going to be at 10 midnight. Hashtag HBCU Giving Day, Clark Atlanta University, their mission to prepare students to be leaders and problem solvers in the communities globally. Go to CAU dot, first of all, y'all see, that's a long, okay, Clark Atlanta, y'all giving a hashtag is way too long. That's way too long, that long website there. Just go to Clark Atlanta website, y'all give. Tomorrow we'll have more Congressional Black Caucus Day 2. I'm doing a panel today on athletes and activism, and so you definitely want to see that. I got to go.
And I'm Holla. Baltimore Comedy.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News 1 Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV 1.